Welcome, and there's some handouts there up front. Just for your information, I am Keith Betry. I would say that I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois area. I grew up there, went to college down in South Carolina. Ended up being in Wisconsin for 5 years, another 15 years as an assistant pastor, youth pastor, slash teacher, slash anything else that the head man could not handle or take care of. And then for the last 3.5 years, I've been in Massachusetts. I had no connections with Massachusetts before I came. I knew the pastor and his family that was there because they had been in Chicago some 20 years before. I'd gone to high school with his kids. But as far as family connections, I had driven through New England twice in my life and had really no other connections with it until I got here. And you say, well, so you're kind of out on your own. Well, it kind of felt that way to start off with. And we as pastors and even in congregations can oftentimes get what we're talking about here is ending the Elijah syndrome. We can get the Elijah syndrome. The passage that I have listed for you in your notes is the passage in 1 Kings chapter 19. You have to understand the context. Elijah goes in, tells Ahab, it's not going to rain until I say so. He then disappears off the grid for about 3.5 years. And the only people that he has contact with is, first of all, the ravens. And that's not much conversation. And then he spends time with a widow and her son, living off their good graces in a foreign country. An Israelite. It's outside their region. And so he's kind of been that way. He suddenly, in 1 Kings 18, flashes back into the scene. God says, you go back, contact Ahab. And so he shows back up, runs into a man by the name of Obadiah that has served the Lord, protecting God's people. So it's the first person that he's really had contact with that is a true servant of Jehovah. And then he goes and fights this battle, and it's this conflict on Mount Carmel where he comes to the people of God and says to them, if Baal be God, serve him. If the Lord be God, serve him. And the people just stand there silently staring at him. Like, really? Of course, the events take place. The people are rather eager to take the side of God. When fire falls, they kill the 450 prophets of Baal. Elijah then has this great victory through that, and then you see the rainfall after 3.5 years. And then you get to 1 Kings 19, and you have this statement made by Jezebel, and the statement is this: so let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow, by this time. And Elijah runs. And it takes him 40 days to go about 150 miles. He gets to a point halfway through where the Lord actually feeds him and that. But he's not happy. He's been isolated for a long period of time. And then he suddenly shows up, has his great victory, it's seemingly wise, and then just instantaneously later, he's on his own again. And when he gets to the mountain and God calls him forth, verse number 9, the Lord, he came thither to a cave, lodged there. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said unto him, what doest thou here, Elijah? God goes, what are you doing here out in the middle of nowhere? And you've chose to isolate yourself again. And verse 10, Elijah makes a statement. I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altar, slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away. And then you have this display by God, the wind and the breaking of the rocks and all of these things, and then the still small voice. And the Lord says unto him, verse 13, what doest thou here, Elijah? And what's Elijah's response? word for word, verbatim, what he's already just said. I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, and because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altar, slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And what does the Lord have to do? The Lord starts connecting him with individuals. Now understand, the next two individuals he's going to connect them to, it says, you go find these individuals are not Bible-believing strong people. Tells him to go find Hazael to be king over Syria. In verse 16, Jehu, the son of Nimshi. And then he says this, and find Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Hameloth, shalt thou anoint to be prophet in thy room. And then look at verse 18. The Lord has to correct his thinking. You're not the only one. He says this, yet have I left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him. You have in these notes, what happens with this Elijah syndrome where you get affected and you get disconsolate, you feel like you're alone? It often comes after failure. I mean, here he's had a great victory, but he fails because he runs off, and then he spent 40 days pining over this, and then when God finally talks to him, he says, I've been very jealous of the Lord God of hosts, and I alone am left. I'm the only one serving the Lord. You can feel that way sometimes. God's response to this is, yet I have 7,000 in Israel. All those have not bowed to Baal. You're not the only one. We can feel that way, and I sense this a little bit just coming here. You can go to some places that are a Bible Belt region or the Midwest. You can go, and there's churches within 15 minutes of you that are good churches, and 20 minutes, and you can have fellowship with individuals. But you get here to New England, you got to drive an hour, 45 minutes sometimes, 3 hours. You know, you may feel that way. And you just kind of go, I feel like I'm the only one that's serving the Lord. And you can get that way in your isolation and your feeling of this. It just feels this way. Well, what the Bible has in the New Testament when it comes to the church, that there's examples of churches connecting with churches and people connecting with people and pastors connecting with pastors and ministers connecting with ministers and churches being concerned for ministers and churches being concerned for other churches. You have in your notes there's just some examples, and I'm not going to spend a great deal of time. I realize I have 35 minutes, and so I got a lot to get in 35. I mean, that's one of the hardest things to do on these time things. But Philippians 4, 10 through 19, you have the care of the Philippians. There you have this church that's far and distant from Paul. Paul is in prison, surrounded by pagans. And what's this Philippian church doing? They're sending him gifts. And they even send Epaphroditus. Their concern and care for him is such. And the Apostle Paul's feeling is, I can't wait to get to where you're at. There was this feeling of mutual concern and care for the church at Philippi and the church for Philippi for Paul, that they were willing to send one of their best ministers in their church to come and minister to Paul to encourage him in a time while he is in prison facing trial. 1 Thessalonians 2, 14 through 20. In that passage, you have the church at Thessalonica, a church that's just growing, that has learned from the churches of Judea. Okay, it says the churches of Judea. It's not the church in Jerusalem, it's the churches in Judea, and how they're functioning while they're suffering, and they're learning from them how it is to suffer in the region that they're in. Hundreds of miles away, and so there's interaction that is going on between the churches of Judea and the churches of Thessalonica, the church at Thessalonica, and what's going on there. And their desire for Paul to be with this church. You read that in that account, and he is there stating that he wants to be with them. You have also 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, this famous passage that we oftentimes go to when we talk about giving. You read throughout this, and there are continuous compliments on how this the churches in Macedonia are getting themselves together to send gifts to the church in Jerusalem. over 1,000 miles away, 800, 900 miles away, a church there that's in trouble because they're being persecuted. The churches of Macedonia are getting themselves together. They're looking for ways to send the funds. They're finding trusted individuals to send them out that way. And they are encouraging, and the Apostle Paul says, and we're encouraging the churches of Achaia, which Corinth was a church that was in Achaia, to give and to learn how to give like these churches in Macedonia are willing to go and reach out to churches that they have very little contact with, but they're going, these are churches that are in need in this time. And then even this, I thought about this at the end, and I'm just giving you, you can go through the New Testament and just find the interconnectedness of churches throughout and individuals in those churches. But 2 Corinthians, Timothy 4, 10 through 18. This is where Paul is standing, and there's this discouragement of Paul at his abandonment, but he's encouraged by individuals. And I'm going to just turn to this and read this one. He's encouraged by individuals that show up. Now, this is his second time that he's in prison. This is the time that afterwards he is beheaded. He loses his head. But in verse 10, just think about this. For Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. One of his co-workers is gone. Abandons him. Departed in Thessalonica. The Cretans to Galatia. Titus into Dalmatia. These are individuals that just went away. Not because they were falling away, but that they were doing missions. And he says this, only Luke is with me. At least I've got somebody here. I don't feel like I'm by myself, out on a limb. Then he writes to Timothy, take Mark, bring him with thee, for he is profitable to me for the ministry. Tychicus have I sent to Ephesus for them to be encouraged. The cloak that I left Troas with Carpus, when thou comest, bring with thee the books, especially the parchments. And then verse 16, at my first answer, no man stood with me. And here he makes his defense, he's by himself. He's standing before the Caesar and the royal government. Nobody there. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me, verse 17, and strengthened me, that by me the preaching might be fully known, that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. But now he's encouraged, and he's having that same passage, he's encouraged that now Luke's with him. He's looking for Timothy to come, and just the encouragement of having other individuals, and he had just gotten done standing by himself. So you have it throughout the New Testament that we as churches, pastors with pastors, churches with churches, ought to try and connect, because we shouldn't be sitting here going, I'm the only one. You're not. You're not the only one. And so what are ways, and this is more of a practical session, and I do even want some feedback here. I got a guy from Massachusetts that you know, we can connect with. I have not met personally, so this is a good thing. But we have to ask ourselves questions like this in the middle page there that you have. What are some present-day challenges us to connecting as churches with churches, pastors with pastors, today? And I've given a few just in my own thinking what sometimes we have. It is ironic in the age of connectedness. We've all got the ability to connect to one another in an instant, whether it be through email, phone, or otherwise. We can see each other face-to-face with a screen on our phone. So it is ironic that we are disconnected sometimes. But here's some things. Time. You know, it takes time. Okay, I got to call somebody and say, hey, how you doing? That takes time. I'm going to go have breakfast with somebody. Takes time. Distance, you know, pastors, think about this. You know, it's an hour drive, 45-minute drive, two-hour drive to go visit with them, see them face-to-face, just talk with them. We're independent, fundamental Baptists. We can handle these problems ourselves. I don't need anybody else to do this. I can do this. I am the answer. You do have people that think that way. But there is some independency where you're going, well, we're supposed to be independent. We shouldn't be looking to other churches or other people to encourage us. You're kind of going, well, you need that. And there is some short-sightedness. Time that you spend with other individuals, that you go out of your way, may have greater impact than what you would have done with that time. or with that distance that you traveled. There's a short-sightedness often with what goes on. Here's another reason we don't like to get together. Get together as pastors, and one pastor's going, hey, you got it. You know what happened? We had this and this and this happen in our church, and everything's just going great. And you walk into this and you go, I just had four people leave. And I got a fifth one that's wanting to leave. And you just think through this and you go, well, what's going on? Well, we sometimes don't like showing up and talking with others because, you know, you're kind of going, oh, it's not doing as well. No, you have to understand, there are times where you're going to be doing well and others are not, and they need the encouragement just to see God's doing a work somewhere. He may not seemingly be doing it where I'm at right now, but he is in the working ministry. So the last one I have here is the failure to recognize the Lord's challenge of Acts 1:8. You know, in our church, we oftentimes worry about our own local ministry. And then you walk into our church and we have this bulletin board and it has all these foreign missionaries. And what do we miss out on? There is Judea and Samaria. There's these local other churches that are a part of that reaching out to the world at large that are oftentimes forgotten, where you're going, that's just as much a part of our ministry as anything else. And so not just Jerusalem, not just the uttermost parts of the earth, but we have a responsibility for Judea and Samaria, our local region. You remember Jerusalem, it's sitting in the middle of Judea, but that was a larger region. We would call it perhaps a state in our culture and that type of thing. Let me just stop here. Can you, in your own mind, just sitting here talking, because I was just thinking, what are some of the things that we sometimes don't connect? Anything else that you can think of? Yes.
I'm thinking you can be in the same ballpark, and I mean, you know, a same doctrinal statement, okay? But when people you get together with, and then you have them, it narrows it down a lot, because all they're talking about is what they have done for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I give God the glory, you know, but it's all about them. And you know, there can be emphases that you don't think are biblical whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so you're together with them and you come away discouraged. Yeah. It's like there are very few people, like Paul even said that. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't have anybody like Timothy. Yeah. You know, but it's like it makes it very discouraging for fellowship, because so many that are doctrinally sound seem to be all about themselves. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. There can be, and even thinking along the line, there can be even, you know, we got some concerns. Oh, I don't want to get together with that guy because his doctrine is slightly different than mine.
Right.
Okay, I'm a separatist, but, you know, we sometimes divide ourselves so far that we isolate ourselves. And you're kind of going, the guy preaches the gospel. He may not agree exactly on the way that he runs his church as far as the way they organize it, whatever. But I'd encourage him. He can encourage me. We may not get together on some other things, but I can get that to fellowship with them. And so sometimes even that can be. Anything else on this realm right here?
Yeah. It could be under the doctrinal differences, but the translation issue is such a big one.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate. It is. And it shouldn't be. We should be going, we believe guys, the same.
Some guys don't even ask you what your view really is. They just hear something and then all of a sudden they're treating you differently because they figure, oh, well,
they've lost. Yeah.
Movement or something.
You can have that type of thing too that just keeps you distant from people that you would find real strength and encouragement from. So let's start with this, okay? Connecting pastors with pastors, okay? We're going to get down to, some of you are people that are not pastors and you go, well, okay, this doesn't mean much for me, but understand this, connecting pastors with pastors is good for your church, good for the health of the church. Here's some things, and I just have suggestions here. You have everything. I gave you the full notes so that you have them, whatever. You ought to call and email other pastors regularly. Just go out of your way, and you go, not even that I need them for anything. You know, most oftentimes when I have pastors call me, it's like, hey, how you doing? Great. Okay, I need this and this. And you're kind of going, well, okay, you know. You just call them. email them, say how things are going, and that type of thing. This is a good way just to get connected with the other person. There's not this kind of feeling, okay, what are they calling me for this time? No, you just call and email or talk to them or whatever you can, even FaceTime do that type of thing. That is, you go, that's pretty basic. Plan to get together for breakfast or lunch. We've got several pastors I know in New Hampshire that get together for breakfast on a regular basis. They just they plan. They say, we'll get together. If you can't make it, that's okay. We'll still eat your portion of food or whatever, and you know, and we'll still enjoy the fellowship. But they just they plant it on the calendar. Say, we're going to meet at this time. Do that. But you can do this on an individual level with another pastor and go, hey, let's get together for brunch or whatever, and we'll meet at such and such a midway location at some restaurant and just meet there. That can be done. Plan to have a meeting with a small group of pastors. Okay, you just have a meeting where you say, okay, we got this area where we're within an hour or two of one another, and we'll get together quarterly or every 6 months. And we just get together as a group. Do this. Suggestions on this. You can say, we've got this book and we are all just going to read this book. We'll come back and discuss this. And then afterwards we'll eat. We'll have a time of prayer. I know for Massachusetts we've got a meeting that I've started to be a part of in the state, which is a good thing, where we have a few pre-meeting topics. The head pastor, that's the one where the church is going to meet at, typically sends out and goes, hey, here's a couple topics we're going to discuss, just your thoughts on some of this. And they can be very practical in nature. Typically they are. You come in, discuss what's going on in your church, good and bad. Okay, transparency. I found this in the several meetings I've had. I've been doing really well one time, and there's another guy across the table that's doing, you know, badly, and I've come in, and I haven't been doing well, and this guy's going, well, just let me tell you what happened to this person in my church. This is incredible what the Lord has done. So you have that type of thing that goes on. You have a time of prayer, and then have a meal, whether you go out to eat or that type of thing. Some examples of this. I told him, he sat down next to me, and I said, I'm using you as an example. And he goes, what are you teaching? I said, Elijah syndrome. And Dr. Minnick goes, huh. He goes, you're using me as an example of the Elijah syndrome. He goes, sometimes I feel that way. So, even he acknowledged this. But what they had is they called it the Whetstone meeting or the Whetstone conference. What he and four other pastors in South Carolina decided to do is that they were going to get together, and they were about 3 hours away from one another, but they chose a central location. And they meet, and they've done this now for, he was telling me, they've done this now for 27 years. They meet in a gazebo in the middle of a park. And they meet for about 3 hours. They discuss a book. They bring their lunches with them. They have a time of prayer, and then they go their separate directions again. So they all end up driving maybe about an hour, but they meet in a central location, and it gives them a time to pray. And I believe, if I remember the time right, I didn't ask them exactly, but they meet, I think, every 2 to 3 months, I think. They just do this, and they plan, and they have the meeting. They go, okay, the next time we're going to meet here is such and such. And they did this. Now, this has gotten to be larger for them. I think Dr. Minnick runs a thing called the Whetstone Conference about every 3 to 4 years, where he has pastors meet down in Greenville at their church. But on an individual level, you know, with other pastors in his area, do this. And they've been very much encouraged for now 27 years, which is hard to imagine that you've got five guys that have been in ministry that long in the same location, getting together and encouraging and strengthening one another. The idea of whetstone, iron sharpening iron. So a man does the countenance of his friend. Okay, we have a meeting of Massachusetts pastors. It meets in different locations. We met in Brockton and Plymouth, and it's at our church, at Beth Eden Baptist Church in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. We have a topic. We then eat lunch afterwards. It's prepared by the church that's there. And it's about a 2-3 hour thing in the middle of the day there, and we do that. And so We'll talk to you in a little bit about this, but I'd be happy to have you come out our direction for that. Pastor's prayer meeting, if you're in New Hampshire, September 26th, which is a week and a half from now, 10:30 a.m., Heritage Baptist Church in Windham, New Hampshire. Matt Fagan, who's here at the conference, he's the really, really tall guy out of everyone, so you don't know who he is. He's planning on this. Tegan was the one that actually told me about this and then talked to Matt about it. He's just asking. He doesn't mind you coming. Anybody from New Hampshire area, they're praying for the state of New Hampshire, but they have lunch right after that, and so they just need to tell the people how much to plan for as far as the preachers that are coming for that. So that's an easy thing to do. Plan a time of prayer for pastors. I know of one state. It's the state of Ohio. They get together once a year and get pastors from every county. They've worked on this. They said, let's get a pastor from every county, and we're going to pray for our state. And they're praying for this, praying for the fact that the Lord will help them to identify places to plant churches to increase the amount of churches going on in the region. And so they gather for that type of a meeting. It's been pretty incredible what has gone on there from some of the reports I've had. But, you know, time of prayer. Or larger meetings for fellowship, not, you know, just four or five guys or six or ten guys that may be doing this. This is a great conference. Okay, we've gotten churches from regions from Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and all of that. A conference like this is a great time to get together to meet new people or renew contacts with one another. Kevin Hobie, who's at New Boston Baptist Church, said there are regional meetings for the American Council of Christian Churches. You know, that's not a Baptist organization. I understand that, but there are other people that are preaching the gospel. They're fundamental, and this is an organization that's kind of the broader scope that's out there. It may not be a Baptist church, but there are churches like that. This is something else for, this is what I was telling you about, Randy, here just a little bit ago. Northeast Region Meeting for Arch Ministries. Okay, you say, what's Arch Ministry? We'll get into this in a second. But Arch Ministries' goal was connecting churches with churches, pastors with pastors. And their goal is ultimately church planting in every county in the United States. That's their goal. But they want and desire pastors to get together so that they know who each other are on the basis of praying. Getting this thing in. So that they can do this. So Arch Ministry, if you have not been to their website, you ought to sometimes. I'm just giving you this. You can register for that New England meeting on November 17th and 18th. That's the weekend before Camp Norfield. We meet about 4 o'clock. We're done by noon. You can even go over and see where Moody is buried and some of those things that are there over in Northfield if you've not done that. But it was a time of just talking through discipleship, church planting. It was a good time having a number of men last year at this meeting praying together, but just saying, you know, let's consider what we can do to be helping churches in the region for this. And so connecting church planters, that, and this is their goal for 2030, is to have churches of like-mindedness in all 3,000 counties in the United States. But here's the thing that they've done. If you go to their website, you see all those churches? Those are churches that they have figured out are of what we would say like-mind faith and practice that they've had contact with. They've actually had people in their church check out the websites. The pastor there, Tim Potter, has had connections with many of these churches, and they find out these are churches that are like-minded, and so they put them on the map. So you've got the globes there. You've got churches that are church planting, which are the arrows, I believe, and ones with hearts, which are ones needing pastors. You're going, this isn't by any stretch of the imagination a full list. It's not. They're just trying to do this. This is a great thing for me. I had somebody in my church about 2 months ago come up to me and go, Pastor, I've got relatives that live in Las Vegas. They're looking for a church. Do you know of a church in Las Vegas? I had been the year before at a meeting of a bunch of pastors that were there praying and fellowshipping. That was all they did. And there's a pastor in Las Vegas. And so I was able to pull up this name of the church, say, here's the name of the church. Stephen West is there, and he's planted a church in Las Vegas. If your relatives are looking for a church, have them start there. Have them look there. And so you have a list like this. So Arch Ministries does this, but ultimately, and here's the other thing, if you're a pastor, they've been doing this 4 years now. Arch Ministries has a meeting for pastors in Orlando in January. And you go, wow. You go, why? Well, because it's either Orlando or Las Vegas. You say, where are the cheapest place to get flights from all over the country to one location? It's either Orlando or Las Vegas. So they choose Orlando. There's a church there, TJ, and his church there. And they meet, and the meeting is pastors getting together, praying, giving testimony. There's no major sessions where someone gets up and does teaching times. There may be a 15, 20-minute thing, but it's you getting to know other pastors, and you just find it to be a conference. Tim Potter said, let them know, if you want to go to this, it's a great time. Have you been down to that one?
Yes.
Yeah, you've been down to that one. Anyone else been down to that one? Toby, you have not. They pay for you to fly down there. They take care of your transportation, and they take care of your meals while you're down there. When Tim called me on this 4 years ago, I was like, okay, are you a Nigerian prince? You need my money. And he said, no, this is legitimate. We want to get pastors together just to fellowship with one another. That is our goal. And I talked to him earlier this week, and he was in Argentina. When I called him, I didn't realize that. And he said, give him my cell phone number and have him contact this. And if there's a pastor that would like to do this, we will pay for them to go down there. And we want them to be a part of this fellowship. That's their goal. And they're not looking for money to be contributed. There's somebody in their ministry that pays for this, the desires to have pastors meeting with pastors. This is a good time of fellowship. You meet a lot of guys across the country. Some of them you've met in the past, and you're going, I didn't know where they went. But you're meeting other individuals, and you're able to sit down and talk to a man, you know, and he pours out his heart to you and lets you know what's going on. And It's a sharpening time. And so this is something to take advantage of, connecting pastor to pastor. I know of another pastor that, on his own funding, had a larger church that he would pay for several pastors and their wives to go to a camp. The camp got a little bit of advertising out of it because the pastor showed up there. But he would invite them to come to this retreat. He'd have a couple of small, short sessions, but it was just a time for pastors and their wives to get together with other pastors and their wives that they may not know, but they were all from the same region, and they got together, and some of the bonds that were formed there were lasting, where pastors that didn't know each other were very much friends afterwards and very much in close contact. And so you can have that. I know several pastors that do this. Jared Heatherly has tried this down in Westport. And Tegan does this. At times, he calls up certain pastors and says, hey, it's Memorial Day. I'm having a picnic. If you want to come, great. It's at my house. And it's just a good informal time. Families get together. Your kids get to know other people. You could do that, and depending on the region you're in. The closeness of it. So, any other, before I go any further, when am I done here? I'm supposed to be done right now. Okay? I'm going to cover everything. Any other ideas in connecting pastors with pastors? Okay?
Well, yes? For me, just one thing. If I don't put it in my day timer,
Yeah. You have to put it down, write it down when you have these things.
Same with contact missionaries or
have
people
to.
People that moved away that aren't in a good church yet and you're still spending time with them or with phone prayer. I don't put it in my calendar. It just doesn't
Yeah. Pastorally, you have to. You have to. Okay. I'm going to give you a condensed 3-minute version here. of connecting churches to churches. You've got it all written down there. So this. How do you connect churches to churches? Okay, I'm talking pastors here, but what about churches, people in your congregation feeling like they know other congregations? How can you get them together like this? Pastors, we get the fellowship, but you know, what about other churches? Okay, starts with the pastor connecting with other churches. You got to be doing this. You got to know other churches in the area. You've got to be connecting with them. You reinforce in the preaching and the teaching on the subject that we're not the only church in existence. Okay, there are other churches out there. The Lord's doing a work in them, and God is doing a work all over the country in individual local bodies, and we ought to rejoice in this, and when churches are thriving, and pray for them when they're not, and do that type of thing. Pray for other local churches, specifically from the pulpit. We've started doing this in our church where we choose one local church and that pastor, and we pray for them on the Sunday morning, and we and I attempt to try and get these pastors beforehand to say if there's any prayer requests, and if I can, I tell them we prayed for you anyhow, and how's it going? You do that type of thing. Create a list of churches in your area that need a pastor. You found this in your it's already in your bulletin. Tegan was the one that came up with this, of churches that are needing pastors. Your church congregation's got a pastor, and they're kind of going, well, we're doing okay. Well, remember the time when you didn't have a pastor? What that was like? The search for that? And churches go, well, I'll pray for that ministry. Yes?
Just something. I'm not pastoring, but there are like four churches, and our church participates with four pastors, and we just got done it, in fact. For 4 weeks, this year they went through the book of Philippians, and one pastor will have chapter 1, 2, you know, and so they go around in one of those 4 weeks here at your own church, and then after that, I don't know, not really, we call it a round robin,
yeah.
And then after that we had a Saintspiration at one of the churches, probably not connected to it, but it really is a good way for the people to get to know the other people.
Yeah. And that's what I have here, opportunities and interaction fellowship. I've got people from my congregation that are here. They now recognize there's other churches out there with other people that are, you know, it's a good time. Camps and retreats. Ladies retreat at the Wilds this week. It's this weekend. Yeah, not good. Combined services, just what you're talking about. You with another church, do this. You could do a Thanksgiving service. I talked to one pastor. They get three or four churches together the Sunday night before Thanksgiving. They get together. They have a praise service together and do this. A combined Saintspiration Testimony Preaching Fellowship Service. Kevin Hobie and Mountain View Bible Church were the ones that really pushed this in our area, where we would get together Easter and just before Reformation Day, and we'd get together for a service. We'd have an orchestra that would play. There would be somebody that would write parts for the orchestra. The different people, different churches have these things coming in. And you'd have an hour and a half service and then food afterwards. Good time of having three or four churches get together and find out what's going on in other churches and that. 4th of July church picnic. Having combined church picnics. Okay, you could do that. Service projects. Helping another church with one of their special events and banquets. They got a special event and you want all their people to be able to attend. You have your people run the nursery and the children's program while the parents are able to go to, or you have, those type of things can be done. Helping the Bible school, teen outreach, missions trip to that church. How about you got men in your church that are construction people? Just going to another church and going, hey, can we work on some project? There's one church that I know that sends out a team, and they send them out about every quarter, and these men take about 3 days off to a week. And they're all skilled in different things, and they go into a church and say, can we help out? And it's usually connected with church planning type things for that. And then you ought to be praying that the Lord plants churches. Consider the Lord may call one or several out of your church to plant another local church. And budget to help church planters go out from another local church to your region. Okay, that's what we're talking about here in New England. We've had several different men get together and just say, you know, we've got regions that need, we need people there. Let's plan now financially and in prayer. So if somebody out of our congregation is going, hey, we'd like to plant a church, we've got money from multiple churches to get them on their way to start another church. And that's how you create fellowship. You plant a church, guess what? They're tied to you. There's a connection that's there. All right. That's it. I'm done. We need to get you to the next session. I thank you for your time. And any questions other than that? Great. So.